Welcome to Skip the Queue, a podcast for people working in or working with visitor attractions. I'm your host, Kelly Molson.
On today's episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Paul Marden, CEO of Rubber Cheese. We're speaking with Alison Bowyer, Executive Director of Kids in Museums, and Jenny Hill, Lead Museums Curator at Craven Museum. It's almost a Kids in Museum takeover, as Paul is one of their amazing trustees. Today, we're finding out what it takes to be a truly family-friendly museum, why it's important for you to engage with the Kids in Museums manifesto, and how you can enter the awards this year.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on all the usual channels by searching Skip the Queue.
Hello, Alison, Jenny and Paul. Welcome. Welcome, welcome to Skip the Queue today. This is a treat. I am joined by Alison and Jenny today, and we're going to talk about Kids in Museums. And I've also got Paul. Hello, Paul, who has joined me as co-host today. And he is going to start the icebreakers. This is new.
It is, isn't it? It's a brave new world for us, isn't it? So I've got a lovely one for you, Alison. So should we get started? What are you most likely to buy when you exit through the museum gift shop?
Oh, gosh, that's a really tough one. Definitely postcards. I'm also a sucker for a nice sort of pencil case, or I do like museum jewellery. I have quite a lot of Tatty Divine, especially museum-themed jewellery. And I do also have a penchant for, like, cute fluffy things, even though I'm not a child. I'm 44 years old, but still.
I'm loving this. Hello, museums. Alison is your best gift when she comes, because she's filling up her bag.
Think of all of those museum gift shops that you can go through with all the jewellery in, because there are some amazing ones, aren't there, that have the jewellery stands in them.
There completely are. And I like to buy all my gifts for other people from museums if I can. So I'm a big museum shopper.
It's really lovely to do that. So just before Christmas, it was November time. I went over to the Ashmolean Museum, and their gift shop is really lovely, actually, and had a really good nosy around it in between meetings. And oh my God, I bought so many of my Christmas gifts in there. It was brilliant. But my best friends, I bought Edie a book called Bear at the Museum, which she adores. It's like it's the most read book in our house at the moment, which is lovely. But I bought my mother-in-law jewellery. I bought her earrings from the Ashmolean, which were, absolutely lovely. So I'd never really thought about jewellery from a museum as well. There you go. Good tip for you from Alison today. Thank you. Right. Jenny, have you ever been told off by security for touching a museum exhibit?
I haven't personally, no, but I did visit Manchester Museums with a friend. And she was told off whilst we were in the gallery, because it was a really pretty furniture display, and she just kind of automatically reached out a hand because she was like, oh, it's so pretty, and instantly clocked by the security guard in the room, and we very sheepishly left quite quickly.
I love that. It's really hard, isn't it, if you're quite a tactile person as well, and you're like, oh, because you would do that if you were in a shop, right?
Exactly, yes. And she was just really excited by it. It was kind of just like an instant response. We were like, oh no, shouldn't have done that.
I love that. One day you will get told off, I know this. Mm-hmm. And you need to come back on and share that with us. Okay, right, I've got one for both of you now. So Alison, I'm gonna start with you. If you had to wear a t-shirt with one word on it for the rest of your life, what word would you choose and why?
Oh gosh, one word makes it really difficult, because it can't be like a command.
Well, it could stop.
Yeah, that's true.
Is a command.
Because I have one at the moment that I'm quite fond of that just says be kind on it.
That's nice. All right, well, maybe I'll let you have two words.
You can't just say kind, because that sounds really weird and odd. If I'm allowed to, it would be kind.
Okay. We'll allow to for the purpose of this podcast. We'll allow to. That's nice. I like that one. Jenny, what about you?
Be curious as well, I think. That's something that I'm always happy for our visitors to do when they're visiting, is to be curious. And I think it's just a good motto for life, isn't it? To always be thinking, always be inquisitive. Yeah.
They're very good ones. Paul, I'm going to ask you as well. Sorry, dropping you right in it. What about yours?
Learn.
Learn.
If it's got to be one word, because one's a toughie, learn.
I like that somebody actually went with the brief. Thank you for obeying me.
Always. I know my place.
Doesn't happen often. All right. Thank you, everyone, for sharing that. I appreciate it. Right. Unpopular opinions. What have you prepared for us? Alison, over to you first, I think.
Oh, gosh. This question made me so stressed.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. Not in a bad way. Because I was like, oh, my goodness. I'm not sure what I have that's unpopular. And then I started Googling unpopular opinions and I found all these weird lists of like things that I'd never even considered were opinions, like people saying that like C is the most redundant letter in the English language. Oh. And you could replace them all, you could replace all C's with S's and K's. Apparently this is a commonly held unpopular opinion. So yeah, then I started thinking, oh goodness, I'm not really sure I'm up to this. I think what I came up with in the end was, which is going to make me unpopular probably, I think pizza is the worst takeaway because it always arrives cold and hard and the topping off it falls off in transit. So you end up with a really lousy meal.
I love a pizza takeaway though. I can't be down with you on this one. Because I love a pizza takeaway. It's because we never get to eat pizza. Well, oh no, actually we've had pizza quite frequently recently because Edie loves it. But Lee has always been a bit like anti-pizza takeaways. So... okay.
I don't understand people that have get the delivery of burgers and chips, because surely that is going to be cold by the time it gets to you, and they're going to be rubbish chips.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, that is weird. I've never ordered a burger to be delivered to my house. That sounds strange to me. Okay, let's see what Twitter feels about your pizza unpopular opinion. Jenny, what about you?
Oh, mine's similar on a food topic, which I feel is going to make me really unpopular. But something I always say that really annoys people is I really hate brunch.
Okay.
Which I feel is very unpopular, but I'm a person that gets regularly hungry. So for me, waiting to go out for food in the morning is just not possible. So I will always have to have something to eat before I leave the house. So I'll always basically have breakfast. And then before you know it, I'm eating again. So at that point, it's essentially lunch. So for me, brunch doesn't really exist.
Yeah, but doesn't it? Okay, I get it. All right, let me argue this point back to you, though. So if your girlfriends or whoever had asked you out to brunch, would you, you'd have breakfast first, right? So you'd have like 8 o'clock breakfast and then you'd go for brunch. But if you're always hungry, doesn't that just mean you just eat lunch a little bit earlier? So brunch is like...
I mean, I don't mind eating again, but it's just the concept, I guess, of calling it brunch just doesn't feel accurate for me by that point because I've already had a full breakfast.
Okay, so I have a similar challenge with afternoon tea. I can't stand afternoon tea. Sorry if this upsets people. I don't understand why you get to a certain age and all of your every like thing has to be, oh, should we go for afternoon tea? No, why don't we just go to the pub like we used to go to the pub? Like, just go to the pub. Like, what is it about afternoon tea? It's really annoying, and it's one of those like it's always at like 3 o'clock. So what meal, what is it?
It's not a meal. It's the same situation, but in the middle of the afternoon. I agree.
Exactly. Okay. I can get on board with your brunch ring then if you're on board with my afternoon tea thing. Good.
I'll take you afternoon tea and I'll raise you a kids' party at 2:30 in the afternoon. It's neither lunch nor is it dinner. So I have to feed the child before, I have to feed the child afterwards, and then they're going to eat more food in the middle of the day.
They are.
That's
they are, but I mean, Edie eats constantly, so that doesn't really matter. But kids' parties are amazing because buffet food is the best kind of food. Like, I'm all down for a kids' party. You get what's-its, like what's not to like. You get party rings. There's always sausage rolls, which is like my number one top, you know, snack of all time. I'm here for the kids' parties. I'll just take the food. You can have all the kids. Okay, shall we talk about some serious stuff now?
Yeah, shall we do that?
I mean, it's still equally fun, but let's get on, shall we? We're talking about kids in museums today.
Which is really good, isn't it?
It is a great topic.
I feel like I'm going to learn loads about kids in museums that I probably should already know as I'm a trustee of kids in museums. But I get to ask Alison all the questions that perhaps I've been a little bit too scared to ask for the last year, because I might look a little bit silly if I don't know the answer.
Yeah, and she has to answer you because that is what the podcast rules are.
Exactly. All right, then, Alison, why don't we kick off? Tell us a little bit about Kids in Museums and how the organisation was developed.
Kids in Museums has existed in one form or another for about 20 years now, which always astonishes me a little bit. So we started life when our founder, who at the time wrote for The Guardian, her name was Dee Burkett, and she took her young child, I think she was about 2 years old, to the, I'm going to name and shame, I'm afraid, the Aztecs exhibition at the Royal Academy. And her son screamed at one of the massive Aztec statues, which, if I remember the exhibition correctly, was totally fair enough because the statues were pretty, I mean, they were designed to be scary. I mean, that's why, one of the reasons why they built some of them. So they were thrown out of the Royal Academy because apparently he was disturbing the other visitors. And then Dee wrote about this in her Guardian column. And what happened after that was The Guardian got a lot of letters coming from families telling Dee about similar experiences they'd had when they were out and about in museums with their children. And so a campaign was born to make museums better places for families, children and young people to visit. And to an extent, what that initial kind of what happened on that day at the Royal Academy, that kind of remains our guiding principle. We are led by what visitors tell us about their experiences, and we really strongly feel that museums, galleries, heritage sites as kind of public space should be for everyone, and everyone should be free to have that access, to feel comfortable when they're visiting, and to have a really great time during a visit. So since then, the sort of the charity has evolved in various ways. Today, we work across the whole of the UK, and we will work with any kind of museum, gallery, heritage site, historic house, castle, any kind of outdoor heritage site, to support them and lead them and encourage them to take action to be better places for families, children, young people. We're quite a small organisation. There's only 5 of us in total, but we feel like we achieve a lot. And last year we won the Museum and Heritage Award for being the best sector support organisation in the UK, which was a really amazing validation of our work. That definitely doesn't mean we're sitting on our laurels, though. We're always trying to spend time talking to families, talking to young people, talking to museums about how we can create new programs, refine our existing programs to do better. And we really want to be approachable, supportive, trusted experts. So we are doing the best by both the audiences we represent and the museums we try to support.
I think it the size of the organization, I know Vanessa, our chair, often says how much you as a team punch above your weight, because I don't think anyone would imagine that it was such a small team that was having such a loud voice. Does that sound, is that a positive thing? That should be a positive thing. And how much impact you have with such a small team. It's amazing.
It was lovely at the M&H show. I was at those awards and I saw you. I saw that win happen. And it was fantastic because the cheer from the crowd was pretty phenomenal. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. I was so sure we weren't going to win. I wasn't there and I'd gone to bed and gone to sleep.
Woke up to some spectacular news.
Yeah, no, it really did. But yeah, no, it was brilliant to get that recognition. It helps more people find out about us as well, which is always valuable.
So what is it that you offer museums and how can they get involved more with what you're doing?
So we like to think that we've got something for pretty much any kind of museum, whatever your level of expertise in working with families, children and young people is, whatever resources you have, how many staff you have. So we have a large free offer, which is kind of the sort of the building blocks of what we encourage museums to do, and it's all centering on our manifesto. So our manifesto is something that we compile with children, families and young people So every 2 years, which actually is something we're going to be doing this year, we will be out talking to museum visitors, doing a national survey and finding out about what their good and bad experiences of museums are. And then we will take all that information and distill it down into 6 easy points that make up our manifesto. And then that's a document that we think pretty much every museum should be able to commit to in their work. None of it is particularly complicated, and a lot of it doesn't need to be resource intensive. They're all pretty simple things that everybody should be able to do. So that's a really good starting point. And over 1,000 museums have signed up to the manifesto and hopefully are using it in their work. I know we'll hear later from Jenny about how Craven Museum did that. Once you've signed the manifesto, there are lots of other things that you can get involved in. We've got over 100 free resources on our website, which cover everything from ways to implement the manifesto at low cost, how to create self-guided resources for families, right up to things like how you can engage children and young people with the climate emergency in your museum. So they cover a really wide range of things that we think are helpful to the teams in museums who are doing that work on the ground. We have a programme of UK training. So we run about 10 training sessions a year for museum staff. And we also work with museum development organisations on training. And that's available to attend in person for a small ticket price or to buy as recordings. Then every year we run a programme called Takeover Day, which is a really brilliant, fun, exciting initiative where children and young people aged between 0 and 25 go into museums and they do adults' jobs for the day. And when I say 0 to 25, I really mean that. We have toddlers doing museum takeover days being given tasks like polishing glass museum cases with soft dusters, doing some cleaning and doing some object packing with like wooden blocks. They don't let them use loose on the actual collection.
I'm laughing because
with white gloves on.
I'm laughing because Evie would be like up there licking the glass, like not trying to clean it, thinking about my toddler. And Paul is smiling because he did one of these takeover days.
He did, yeah.
So he's got a massive grin on his face.
We loved it. We got to be curators for the day. The kids got to run around the museum and learn. And then they went back into the learning suite of the Mary Rose Trust and they got told to design an immersive exhibition. And they took ideas from all around the museum and designed out what they would do. And such brilliant ideas that they had. It was such a great experience for them to get that kind of behind the scenes experience of what the museum is actually like.
And we see from Takeover Day that impact Paul has described, more than 70% of the young people who take part say that they would like to go back to a museum again as a result of being part of Takeover Day. And more than 2/3 of the museums say that they now know more about what young people want from their museums and will make a change. So it's a really brilliant initiative. Then we obviously have the Family Friendly Museum Award, which is what we're going to be talking about with Jenny, and I'll talk more about later. And we've got some new programs coming online this year. So for the first time, we're working with a group of museums to help them appoint their first young trustees. So they're going to have people on their boards by the end of the program, aged between 18 and 25. And we also are running some programs with our own youth panel that they've designed. So we are working with them on a project which will hopefully show that museums can help address social isolation that young people experience when they move for education or new jobs.
I think it's just take a pause there and just reiterate that there are 5 of you in the Kids in Museums team. Like, that is a pretty phenomenal menu of things that you offer to museums with just 5 people.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, let's just keep that up there as we're talking today. Thanks, Alison. Jenny, I want to come over and chat to you about Kids in Museums. How did you first kind of find out about them and get involved with what they're doing?
So I've been aware of Kids in Museums probably since I first started working in the sector around 6-7 years ago now. I've been on their website, sort of seen their name come up and used some of their guidance when I was doing some of my initial sort of museum work. But I think they sort of really stood out to me from about 2021. I got involved with some training with part of Museum Development Yorkshire, who's sector support as well, funded by Arts Council England. And they were running a front of house cohort that I got involved with at the time. And we had a really great training session as part of that cohort with Laura Bedford from Kids and Museums. She gave a really inspiring talk and session on creating family-friendly interactions in museums. And that was really inspiring. I learned a lot during that session and really made me think, oh, we definitely need to be involved with this more. And then later on in the same year, I actually did an in-person event. I think it was at the Yorkshire Museum, and actually got to have a chat with Laura there about Kids and Museums work. So that was really helpful. So yeah, we kind of taken it from there. We signed up to the Kids and Museum Manifesto following on from that, started to use those sort of principles in a lot of our front of house work and then behind the scenes as well. So yes, Kim have been on my radar for quite a while, but yeah, it's sort of the past sort of 3 years really that we've really sort of been taking on board a lot of their and using a lot of their resources and their ideas.
It's lovely to see that there was kind of, it was indirectly as well. So obviously Kids in Museums and what they do, that are, you know, it's good that they work in partnership with other organisations as well. So there was like a crossover there. Why did you enter the Family Friendly Museum Award last year?
So Craven Museum went through a national lottery funded redevelopment project between 2018 and 2021. So we completely redesigned our museum space. It used to be really inaccessible. It used to be at the top of Skipton Town Hall. There was no lifts up there. It was a really steep, horrible flight of stairs to get up there. And a lot of the interpretation was really outdated. A lot of it was not very accessible. So after our redevelopment project, which really put access at the centre of all of our work, and particularly looking at family audiences, this is a group that we really wanted to feel welcome to our museum. It's a group that we'd been working with a lot pre-redevelopment, and we really wanted to expand our work with this audience after we reopened. So after all this work was completed, we spent 2022 in sort of that post-COVID year finding our feet, when maybe our visitors weren't quite as confident coming onto site. And people were still getting to know that we were reopened as well. We had got a lot of people coming in going, oh, I didn't realise the work had finished. So that was sort of our sort of pilot year. Whereas last year in 2023, we really felt that we hit our stride, and we've been piloting lots of new ideas in 2022 and embedding our family-friendly ethos in our work. So it kind of was the year that work really felt like it came to fruition after having spent quite a few years developing it. So we thought as a team, we'd really like to sort of get this work hopefully recognised, and the Family Friendly Museum Award really felt like a way to do that. So yes, we really wanted it to sort of give a boost to our team as well, who've been working hard on that. So yeah, we just thought it would be a great year to get involved. And we entered it with very low expectations. We thought, oh, we're a small museum in the north of England. We weren't sure, you know, if we'd be, I don't know, sort of recognised for what we've been doing. So it's absolutely amazing to, yes, get recognition through the award in that way. It's fantastic.
It feels like the recognition was for the team and for the people that were kind of working in it. Is that what kind of, is that what was important to you about entering?
I think so, yes. It was to sort of, to prove to the team that the work that they'd been doing was really valid and really important. And I think in the museum sector, sometimes there's quite a lot of pressure on quite small teams. Like Alison was saying, there's only five people in Kids and Museums, and we're a small team too. So I think having that recognition for the team just really helps them to know that, yes, they're doing a good job. Alongside the fact that it's obviously important to us to sort of share with the families that do come and use the museum, that, you know, it's going well.
How difficult was it to write the entry? Because I think that there's often a barrier. I mean, certainly for us, there's been things that I've thought this would be great to enter, but I look at it and think, oh my goodness, this is going to take me like 4 or 5 days to actually pull all of these things together and write it in a really, in a way that's appealing. You know, did you find it was an easy process to go through?
Actually, yes, we did find it, because I've done some applications that, yes, like you say, it can be quite difficult, quite time consuming. I actually found the process for Kim really easy. So when the applications opened, members of the public were asked to nominate their favourite museum through a form on the Kim website. And we were really excited that we got some lovely nominations from families. And then Kids in the Museum got in touch to let us know that we could make full application because we'd been nominated. So after that point, there was an online form that we could fill out that asked questions like, how have you made visiting your museum accessible to families, children, and young people with additional needs? So that was one of the sort of longer questions on the form because we applied for Best Accessible Museum. And that was, yeah, I mean, I think because of all the work that we've been doing and because that kind of ethos is embedded in our team, we weren't talking maybe about a specific project that we'd been working on. At some applications, I feel like they're very sort of project focused, but having such a wide question like that meant that we could just talk about what we do every day at the museum, which is what's really important to us. So yeah, there were nice questions to answer because they kind of felt like they gave us the space to talk about all of our work. So that was brilliant.
Amazing.
And we also had the opportunity to upload some supporting materials so we could get some photos in there, send through some of our more visual. I think we might have sent a video as well. So that was great too, because it meant we could, you know, share lots of different aspects of our work.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And spoiler alert, even, you won. You won. You're not only be the overall winner, you were the best accessible museum winner as well.
Yes, I know. We're still absolutely blown away by that.
It's phenomenal. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Huge.
I wonder if the reason why you found it, you know, not too painful to do the application is because this is folded into you. This is running through your core. You're just telling people what you do every day. And so, you know, you're just telling the story of what you do all the time.
I think that's how it felt. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Alison, let's talk about, I remember sitting in the audience listening to you talking about all the different museums and what the judges said and what stood out. And I loved hearing those stories. So what was it, do you think, that stood out about the Craven Museum, about their entry for you?
So there were a few things about the Craven entry that really grabbed us. The first that I remember reading was that they had built a manifesto into their visitor charter, which is amazing because they are taking what we know families, children, young people need and want, and they're building it into that work that they do every day. Like Jenny was saying, this is them living that way of working, which is incredible. And I think throughout the application, you got a real sense that all of their staff really cared about this. There was a page in the supporting document with the whole team on it saying just like one little thing about everyone in the team. And it was really amazing to see that, because you felt that where in some museums this is kind of just what the people in the learning team do, that wasn't true at Craven. Everyone at Craven really cared about the families who visited. And I think that was really borne out in the family nominations we received. There were so many families who were telling us how much they loved going to the museum, that their children saw it as like the highlight of their half-term holiday. Mm. And they talked for weeks in advance about wanting to go. And the make and take craft seemed to be a particular hit. There were lots of families telling us that like their children couldn't wait to go back and do that again. And the families who nominated the museum also, they sounded really proud that their town had the museum, which was really lovely. And also, I think something that came through, which is a kind of sad reflection of the way the world is at the moment, they really appreciated that all of that was available for free when they're struggling to find things for their family to do. That don't cost much. It felt like it was a really important thing to have that amazing resource in their town. And there were other little things too. The museum is a safe space. The staff have amazing access training and training in inclusive language. And those things really help with kind of broadening out who can come into the museum. And something that we spend quite a lot of time talking about, but isn't always something museums pick up on. And the Craven Museum website is just amazing, incredibly informative. I think it came in like the top five or something in the state of the museum access website report in the whole of the UK for its access information, which for a museum of its size is absolutely incredible. We spend so much time telling people that families like to plan, they like to look at a website in advance and find out about all the facilities. And Craven had actually done that. And it really makes a difference. So we were really pleased to see that. And then I think the final thing was the community case and how they had a space in the museum where local people, local organisations could show things that were important to them. So they were really giving the local community the opportunity to see themselves in the museum and feel a sense of kind of belonging and ownership. So I think all of those things came together and it was really clear that Craven Museum was going to be a really strong contender, which was why they shortlisted them. And then it was over to the families to judge them during the second stage of the award.
So the fact that you gather together these real families to kind of go and look at the museums that have applied and pass on their feedback to the judges, I think is hugely powerful. Are there any little snippets that the families came back that you liked? Because there were so many lovely little comments that the families had given to us throughout the awards.
Yeah, so I think this quote is one that I think is sort of sums it all up really. The family judge said, "This is one of the most accessible, family-friendly and welcoming museums I have ever visited across Britain. Although small compared to city museums, this has a lot to offer and is well laid out. It is very inclusive and their website is a particular strong point in terms of helping people to feel able and welcome to visit. People can visit the museum or attend an event knowing what to expect and what options are available. We especially love the fact that the Spot the Mouse activity involved actual exhibits. Often this type of activity utilises soft toys or pictures that have been placed around the site and end up being a distraction from the collection, meaning families don't get to actually experience the museum and look at the artefacts on display. But this activity in Craven Museum involved looking for things that were part of the carvings and objects, a great way for visitors to get more close to the collection. We all really enjoyed our visit."
That's so nice.
That's just brilliant feedback, isn't it?
Yeah.
So nice.
And who would have thought having a website that told you information about the museum that was accessible could actually be of value to people?
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
I know.
Who knew?
I wonder who could help you with that.
Yes, although full credit, this is not at one of our websites, so I think we should probably state that.
Absolutely.
But we definitely can help you with that. This is incredible. What lovely words. We've all got smiles on our faces for people that are listening to the audio of this and can't see us. Jenny, I'd really love to know, you know, we go back to the reason that you entered and you said, you know, part of that is for the team. It's for the people that have worked really hard to make all of these amazing things happen. What has the impact been for your team since you won this award?
I think it's just been the real boost that it's given the whole team. Like Alison was saying, everyone on the team really cared about this. You know, every single member of our team, not just maybe our sort of more our learning team or our forward-facing team, everyone cared about it. And I think it's just really inspired us to carry on with our work. We're all very conscious of the fact that working with families, working with accessibility, it's never a finished process. You've not achieved it. So it's kind of really just, yeah, it's given us that extra push to think, oh, actually we're doing well in this and we really want to continue. Like, we don't want to sit on our laurels. We don't want to take this for granted. We want to keep working on this. So I think that was really great. It was also particularly lovely just to know that it was real families who had nominated us, and that, like we were just saying with the undercover judges, you know, it was real families who came to visit us during that judging period and had these positive experiences. So that was just fantastic to know that it was visitors who wanted to sort of recognise the work we've been doing. So yeah, I think that's been the main thing really. Just, it's just been amazing being recognised by the sector and our colleagues and giving us all that kind of, yeah, that boost.
Yeah, like a validation of all of the work that's gone into it.
Yes, definitely.
And what about the impact from kind of general public. Has it had an impact on the visitors that are coming and what they're saying about it? And then also the sector itself. You said it's been a good thing to be recognised within the sector.
So it's definitely had a real impact with our visitors. So we've had some visitors coming to site who've said that they've specifically come because they heard about the Kids in the Museum Award, which has been amazing. You know, some people coming from a distance to visit family in the area and saying, oh, when I was looking for things to do, I saw that you'd won the award. So I thought while I was visiting, I'd pop in. So that's been incredible, that impact with visitors. And our sort of more regular local visitors who've come in. You know, we've got the award up on a shelf behind the front desk. Our front of house team are so proud to have it there behind them while they're working. And we've had local visitors saying, oh, it's so amazing that our town's got a museum that's won this award. And, you know, it's really lovely for local people that we've got this here. So, yeah, that's been really nice for both, you know, bringing in new visitors and also for our local audience. And then within the sector, it's just been so good for us publicity-wise to sort of kind of get our name out there, really. So since the awards, I was just counting up the other day, I've had 7 different institutions in touch asking for site visits to come and look at our work, have a chat with us about best practice. I've delivered another 7 presentations either already or got them booked in for the rest of the year, and then obviously doing podcasts like this, and then we did a blog post as well for Sendin Museum with Sam Bowen. I think that's the pipeline, hopefully. So yeah, it's really kind of boosted us. And we even noticed on social media, new institutions following us that maybe weren't aware of us before or after the award, you know, people taking interest. So that's been really nice as a small local museum to have that kind of more bigger awareness from the sector.
I love this so much. And this goes back to something that comes up time and time and time and time again on these podcast interviews is just how collaborative and how supportive the sector is and how much they want to work with each other. You know, it's so lovely that you can now showcase the processes that you've been through and how you approach accessibility and be able to share that with others so that they can go on and do the same and make theirs better and better and better. I think it's so important to be able to do that. And it makes me love this sector so much. It really does.
Definitely.
What top tips, Jenny, would you give to any museums that are out there thinking, we really want to enter? We really want to enter the awards this year. What would you say were your best top tips for them?
This kind of links to something Paul was saying earlier. And it maybe sounds a bit cliched, but just be yourself. I think there's so much amazing work going on in the sector to do with making venues family friendly. And if you're passionate about what you do and you're working hard to make your venue inclusive, then that will shine through. So maybe sometimes not to overcomplicate it. So if you're doing the work and you really care, then that will make itself apparent. But I guess on a more practical level as well, give yourself time with the application. Don't try and rush it. We work very collaboratively at Craven Museum, so we really wanted the opportunity for all of our staff to be able to feedback into the application process and for lots of different people to read the drafts, you know, make comments, have their say. So by giving ourselves enough time to do that, it really made the process a lot smoother. And also have a look at the Kids and Museum Manifesto. It's a great place to start. If you haven't signed up already, sign up. And if you have, just refresh yourself on it, because it can really help, you know, that framework for how to answer questions and things.
Great tips. Thanks, Jenny.
So with that in mind, should we talk about this year's Family Friendly Awards? Nominations open on March the 19th, I think. Is that right, Alison?
Yeah, that's right.
So what is it that museums can do to enter?
This year, we have 5 categories. So there are 3 size categories, so BAS, small, medium and large museums, which will be organised by number of visits in the previous 12 months. That's all explained on our website. I won't go into that now. Then we have a category for the best accessible museum, which is the category that Craven won last year. And then our new category for this year is Best Youth Project. And that is a prize for museums who are doing long-term, so work longer than 6 months with young people from the ages of 14 to 25. And what we're really looking for is work that young people are given a sort of equal share in decision-making, that are really involved in shaping work. And the guidelines for that category, along with all of the others, are in the guidance notes, which you can download from our website. So that would be the first thing to do. Sounds very obvious. Read the guidance notes carefully, because that should explain most of what you need to know about how to enter. So then there are two routes to entry, really. So what Jenny described, what happened to Craven, that's what happens to most museums. Families will nominate them. So for a family to nominate, they can just go on our website. It's really simple. They just have to tell us the name of the museum they're nominating, and in like a few sentences why they're nominating them. That's it. And then we will contact the museum and tell them they've been nominated and ask them to fill in the museum side of the application process. We've got lots of tools to help museums promote nominations to families. So we've got social media assets for all channels, and we've got some paper forms you can print out and put in your museum if you want to. Then the other alternative is, if you want to enter but you for some reason don't have the time or the capacity to collect lots of family nominations, you can just enter as a museum on our website. That's totally fine. You just go on our website and you look at the museum application form. It's not essential to have a family nomination for the small, medium and large category, but for the best accessible museum, we do ask that at least one family has supported your museum's nomination, just because we feel for that category, it's super, super important that the museums are sort of supported by families for the provision that they offer in terms of accessibility. What happens then is, once we've got all the nominations together, we put together a shortlist. So the shortlisting panel is made up of, we normally have primary schools, young people, people from our youth panel, our staff and trustees, and sometimes representatives from museums who've won in the past. We all come together, we pick a shortlist, and then we announce that in June. And then if you've been shortlisted, over the summer, we will send out families like mystery shopper judges to your museum. So you won't know they're coming. They will just go on a visit and they will report back to us afterwards. And as Jenny says, it's their scores that choose the winners. We don't intervene in any way. We go with whatever the families tell us. So they really are in control. And I think that's one of the lovely things about this award. It is genuinely an award that is given by people who visit museums. And then we will announce all the results in October at our award ceremony.
We've talked a little bit about the mystery shoppers, the family judges, yes, the undercover judges going in and actually looking at the museums. And that's how I first found out about Kids in Museums, because I saw a sign when I was in the London Transport Museum suggesting that people could go on to nominate and also apply to be an undercover judge, which was how I found out about you first. This was a few years ago now. What can families do, though, if they want to be an undercover judge? Can they get involved?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So the best thing to do is to sign up on our website to our family mailing list. And then when we recruit the judges, which will be from June onwards, we will get in touch with you and let you know whereabouts in the UK we need judges. It changes every year because we need the judges to be near the museums on the shortlist. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing that we can't really start until we know where those museums are. But yeah, the best thing to do is to sign up to our family mailing list.
Yeah, it's such a great opportunity, isn't it, for people to go and have a mission, for the kids to go in and have a mission to go and check these places out and be the ones that decide who gets the award. What a great opportunity for a family to go and find that out.
Yeah, don't tell them until they get home, though, because they'll just be shouting that out in the museum.
Do you know who I am? Ashley, do you know who I am?
We get lots of families tell us that their kids really enjoy it because they tell them they're like having to play detective or something and not be seen, and apparently it makes the day out really fun. So yeah, it comes recommended.
So there's a call to action for all the families that might be listening to us to join the mailing list and get in there early to become an undercover judge.
Yeah, and I should say that we will cover travel expenses for the family judges up to £30 a visit. So we try to make it as accessible as possible to be a judge.
Completely. Phenomenal. Brilliant opportunity.
Thank you both for coming on and sharing this with us today. It's been so lovely to hear about it. We're going to put all of the details on how you can enter and how you can sign up to be a family judge as well on the show notes. But essentially, go to Kids in Museums website because they have everything that you need on there. We always ask our guests to leave us with a book recommendation, something they love or something, you know, can be anything, a personal recommendation, a business book, whatever you like. Jenny, what have you prepared for us today?
Well, it's probably not one that people haven't heard of before, but I'm a massive Jane Austen fan. So I would always recommend Emma. Emma is probably my favourite by her. It's one of those ones that I always go back to. So yeah, if you're thinking about, you never read Jane Austen before, you want to read some classics, I would always recommend that one. It's a lovely book.
Oh, it's nice. We get so many people come on and recommend like their favourite book. And there's just, I mean, it's something magic about rereading the book over and over and over again, is it? You always find out something different every time you read it, regardless of how many times you've read it before. Thank you. Alison, what about you?
Gosh, I found it so hard to pick a favourite book. People who aren't watching won't be able to see the bookcase behind me.
It's very full.
Alison, very full. Alison looks like a reader for the people that are listening.
It's not probably necessarily my favourite book, but a book that I really love by an author who I think deserves to be better known in the UK is Standard Deviation by Catherine Heine. She is absolutely hilarious. And it's just a really beautiful portrait of a family living in New York who are all slightly eccentric and unusual in different ways. And I guess I'm really curious and nosy about people's lives. So I love books that kind of open the window onto different kinds of families. And yeah, she's just a wonderful author. All her books are wonderful, but that's my absolute favourite.
Good recommendation. Thank you. And both of those books have never been recommended before as well. So they will go top of the list on our blog post that we have, where we save off all of our guests' recommendations. As ever, if you want to win these books, if you head over to our Twitter account and you retweet this episode announcement with the words, "I want Alison and Jenny's books," then you'll be in with a chance of winning a copy yourselves. Once again, thank you both for coming on. It's been so lovely to hear about the awards and the impact of winning the awards. Congratulations again on all of your hard work. It's just been wonderful to talk to you. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely speaking to you today.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to share the award and some of the other work we do.
And it's got us smiling all the way through, hasn't it, Kelly? It's been a lovely story to tell. So.
I hope people can hear that in our voices, that we're smiling. They can hear that we're smiling. If they don't watch them, nobody watches our videos. Hey, go and watch our videos.
There you go. See us grinning all the way through, smiling.
Thanks for listening to Skip the Queue. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. It really helps others find us. And remember to follow us on Twitter for your chance to win the books that have been mentioned. Skip the Queue is brought to you by Rubber Cheese, a digital agency that builds remarkable systems and websites for attractions that helps them increase their visitor numbers. You can find show notes and transcriptions from this episode and more over on our website, rubbercheese.com/podcast.